Welcome, everybody, to Jawanza for Life, also known as Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Jawanza. Good morning. Got a special morning show lined up for you today. Thank you so much, everybody, for taking time out to tune in, regardless of when you're listening. And I say it's a special morning show, but because of the archives, people go back and listen to the show. So you, depending on when you're listening, I just want to say welcome to you. And to all of the new listeners, I'd like to say welcome. We're constantly getting new listeners. And for those of you who are not aware, we have an entrepreneurial show. We're very, very fortunate to have as our special guest, Professor Joseph T. Geiger. He's an author. He's taught at Institutes of Higher Education, and we're going to be discussing one of his books, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. You know, Professor has stated that at some point in many people's lives, working lives, at some point, they are going to become entrepreneurs. And it may be for several reasons. I mean, God only knows. It might be because you've planned to be one. You've often, you know, thought about owning your own business and starting your own business. Or necessity may be the impetus for you starting your own business. You may lose a job, and you might be forced into entrepreneurship. But at some point, a lot of people are going to become entrepreneurs. You might not see it now, but at some point in your working life, you may well become one. And so we're going to show you how to best be successful at your entrepreneurial ventures, because it's a process of getting information that you can use to benefit you in your undertaking. You don't want to just say, oh, I think I can start my own business and just jump out there and start it. There's a way to do it, and Professor Geiger has created a roadmap to success. And if you follow it, you definitely increase your odds of being successful in your entrepreneurship venture. So let me tell you a little bit about Professor Geiger in case you're not familiar with him. He's currently retired, and he grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business, the University of Denver. And over his lifetime, he has started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management. And in order to help people like you and me succeed in business, he wrote Entrepreneurial Success. It started off with 101 practical business principles, The Road to the Top, and the books just keep growing and growing and growing with new principles. He currently gives lectures and teaches seminars. Fortunate enough to have him as our special guest today. Professor, welcome back to Health, Wealth, and Divine. It's always a pleasure. I'm looking forward to another great show with you today.
Thank you much for having me.
My pleasure. Well, as stated, we're going through the book principle by principle. Again, the book is titled Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. And during the course of the interview, we'll tell you how you can get the book, and I'm sure that you're going to want to get the book because you can always use helpful hints in whatever it is you're doing. Even if you're already in business and you're successful, you can always know more. I mean, nobody's reached the point where they know everything, so just if you're already in business, don't tune out, okay? If you're already in business, saying, I'm already in business, okay, I don't need that. No, you may well learn something if you take time to listen. And, again, we'll tell you how you can get the book during the course of the interview. Professor, if you don't mind, though, before we dive right in, how did you get started in business, becoming an entrepreneur? Because, again, we're constantly getting new listeners, and, you know, I'd like for them to hear how you got into it. I think it's very, very interesting, and you've been doing it before you were an entrepreneurship, you were an entrepreneur before the word entrepreneur made its way into, you know, our vocabulary. So could you share with our listeners how you got started running your businesses and starting businesses? I mean, because you've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, as it turns out, I was raised on a Kansas farm, and I was dyslexic. And they didn't really find that out until I was in about the fourth or fifth grade. And my my brother, who was not dyslexic, interested in engineering, went away to a prep school. And the only reason he and I really got in is because we were from the West, We were from Kansas, and the vast majority of students at these Eastern prep schools were New Englanders, and they wanted people from the West, so they gave my dad a very, very big discount on our costs. And I went because I was dyslexic. And so we were among a group of rather wealthy young boys, and I didn't have any very much money. Most of them got allowances every week, and so they would go to the what was a, kind of the PX in military terms. We had a place where we could buy ice cream and stuff, and I didn't have any money to do that. And I heard some of the boys grumbling about not having the New York Times, particularly on Sunday, because they wanted to look at the sports and all the stuff there. And so I thought, well, maybe there's a way here for me to make a little money, but I didn't have enough to start. So I talked about 20 of them into paying me in advance for 4 months' worth of the New York Times on Sunday. And with that, then I had enough money to buy the papers and to get started. And 3 years later, I had, the vast majority of the students there were taking papers from me. And I sold the business for about $1,000, which today would be probably $8,000 or $10,000. And that's how I got started.
It was interesting that you had that thought process back then. That okay, I see a niche here. You know, I see an opportunity.
Yeah.
Is the word I was looking for to actually provide a service that these other students would be interested in, and you acted on it. And you know, one of the principles that you discuss in your book is that you know, knowing where to find opportunities. They're all around us. I mean, you know, many people miss opportunities that they just overlook. But it's interesting that you saw that and actually turned a profit very early on. And this was even before you had actually, again, before the word entrepreneur came out, or not came out, but actually became popular. You were doing that way back then.
Yep, that's true. I started as a sophomore in high school.
Well, and been doing it ever since. And since then, can you just share with the listeners just some of the businesses that you've owned, some of the types of businesses that you own? I mean, started with that with the paper business, and
well, I started,
went from there to...
I started with the paper business, and then when I got to college, I pretty quickly ran out of money again. And so I made very, very tiny trout flies. I was going to college in Colorado, and I was an avid fisherman, but I didn't have the money to go fishing. So I started making very, very tiny trout flies. And the reason I made very small ones is because nobody else was. So you could buy a trout fly that was, about the size of your thumbnail, or maybe a little bigger. But if you wanted something smaller than that, nobody made them. So I made them that were about half the size of your little fingernail. And and the reason I did that is because I got many times more money for them. I was selling them wholesale in groups of three in a little pillbox that displayed them for $6 at wholesale, $2 a piece. And you could buy bigger ones by however many you wanted at 20 cents a piece, and I was getting $2 a piece. So, and this was wholesale, and you could buy lots of them at 20 cents a piece at retail. So it was a way to make money, and I had a niche in the business world that nobody else was in, so I could get more for it. And I didn't have to worry about all of a sudden waking up and having somebody selling them for a dollar a piece, because nobody was making them, and quite frankly, very few people could make them. I had to make them with a magnifying mirror in back and wearing magnifying glasses, so I could look at the kind of like you see watchmakers put on these magnifiers. Well, I had to look at the back of the little trout fly, so I had a magnifier there, and I'd look over the top of the glasses, and then I'd look through the glasses, and I wore a pair of watchmakers, jewelers' glasses to do it. So it was, and I made a lot of money. But frankly, I was I could easily make $150 an hour in today's money, and so it was a great deal. And then I sold airplanes, started a business to do that. I made yachts, all kinds of stuff. And basically, I just see a niche and say, hey, nobody's there. Why don't I give a go at it? And that was kind of what got me into all these businesses, is you just found the niche that nobody else was in, and you'd say, yeah, I think there's something there. Do a little research on it, and away you go. Figure out how to finance it. And the first one, as I said, I financed by getting my customers actually to finance the business. And the second one took very little to finance it. Selling airplanes took a lot to finance it. So, but each one was somewhat different.
Did you ever find it difficult, Professor, asking people for money? And when I say that, I mean charging for your services, because I know there are a lot of people that find it difficult to actually set a fair price for their own services. They may lowball themselves because they, you know, just have difficulty asking or charging top dollar for what it is, the service or the product that they're offering. Did you ever have an issue with that? And if you could give any words of people that might be going.
Absolutely. I was basically a very shy kid. And so as I grew up, now, the first ones were just my friends, and they were people at school. And when they said, gee, I wish I had a newspaper, I'd say, well, I can supply you with that. I'm delivering newspapers. So that was easy. Basically, they asked me. In the trout fly thing, I was just immensely proud of these little tiny trout flies. And so I trotted down to, after selling a set of them, three of them, to a fisherman on a stream, I thought, well, heck, if he wants them, maybe others do. So I went down to a very, very expensive fishing tackle store and showed them to them. I was very proud of them, and so I didn't really, in that case, I didn't have to ask people to buy them. They were in the retail business, and I was in the wholesale, although I didn't, you know, I didn't think of it in those terms then. When I first started selling yachts, what happened is I hired somebody to do it because I didn't think I could, and in watching him try, I realized he didn't know much about it as I did. He had lots of experience, but he was just all blather and no thought. And what got me then to talk to people is I realized that if I didn't sell off my inventory before winter came, this was in Oklahoma, I was going to go broke. And so there was some real motivation there, but that's what it took. Because up until that time that I realized that the company was going to go under, if I didn't sell those air boats, that was the motivation there. And then after I figured out how to do it, I kind of liked doing it, and so I got better at it. You mentioned when we first started that a lot of people may not realize that they will become entrepreneurs. What the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics of the U.S. government, has found in a long-term study is that something between 33% and 40% of all working people, income-producing people, will be, they call them proprietors, or we would say entrepreneurs, at some time during their life. So the odds of your being an entrepreneur is extremely high. Very. I mean, it's between a third and 40% of people who go to college. And if you said people who go to college and then threw in construction workers, roofers and that sort of thing, plumbers and electricians, it's almost 50%. So it's very, very high. Your chances are just extremely high. And I wrote the book because I saw so many people who I had in my classes who had gone broke. And I kept thinking, my goodness gracious, I could prevent them from going broke. And so that's why I wrote the book. And I wrote it in a very practical way. There's no ivory tower, you know, looking at stuff that might happen written by people who've never done it. So what I wrote is a book with trying to find solutions to the problems, because what you find out once you're in business is the same problem rears its head over and over and over again. And if you figure out a way to address those problems, it makes it much easier and you're much more successful. And then the last thing you try to do, that the book teaches you to do, is to avoid the problems, because you know they're going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you
mm-hmm.
just don't know when or under what circumstance. So if you're aware of that and you can kind of guide yourself around the minefield without stepping on a mine, this business of you find out the problems, it's like being a soldier. You don't want to go out in the battlefield, and the way you find the landmine is to step on it, because you only get to do that once, and then it's kind of all over. So you need to try to learn how to avoid them, and that's what the book does.
Everybody, I'm going to give you an opportunity. If at any point during the show you'd like to speak with Professor Geiger, you have a question or a comment. If you're listening online, all you have to do is dial in at 347-324-5727. If you're listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1, and then I can bring you on and you can ask your question or you can make your comment. Again, we're going through the book principle by principle. Again, the book is titled Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. We were, last show we ended off, we were in Chapter 6, Legal and Ethical Issues. We're still winding that up, okay? We have two more principles to go in legal and ethical issues, and we should be moving into Chapter 7 today, and Chapter 7 is titled Starting a Business. So if we can pick up, Professor, on principle number 51, which is, if you don't run it, speaking of business, if you don't run it like a corporation, it isn't a corporation. If you don't run it like a corporation, it isn't a corporation. Before we tackle that, Professor, I don't want to assume that everybody that's listening knows what a corporation is. Okay, is there a difference between a corporation and a company? I mean, you know, just can you break that down so anybody that's listening, is a corporation a special designation so that our listeners, you know, have the fullness of the comment of the principle when you expound on it?
Yeah, a company is kind of a generic term that is not a legal term that is designates a organization that does business of one sort or another. A corporation is a legal term, and there is a number of types of corporations. There's an LLC, Limited Liability Corporation, which is one of the new forms. The original form actually was first invented by the Romans back in about 500 or 600 A.D. And it was, I can't think of the Roman leader at the time, but at any rate, they were the ones who came up with it, and the Japanese too. They came up with the corporation. And that is a legal term. There's an LLC, an Inc., incorporated. And if you don't say Inc., if you just say Entrepreneurial Success, which is an LLC, but if you just said Entrepreneurial Success, it would not mean that it is a corporation, and therefore you, the in that particular case, I am fully liable for everything the corporation does personally. But because every time I use that, I will say Entrepreneurial Success LLC, Limited Liability Corporation, I am telling everybody who is listening or reads it that this is a corporation, and therefore Joe Geiger is not personally liable for the actions of the corporation. Only the corporation is. If you don't do that, it could be considered a partnership or a proprietorship, which is the proprietorship is owned by a single individual. A partnership, a general partnership, is owned by two or more individuals. And in both of those cases, the owners are personally liable for any and all actions of the corporation. So if the corporation runs out of money, as far as the people suing them are concerned, that is no big problem. We'll go after the owners, which means their homes, their cars, their bank accounts, their everything. If it's a corporation, they can't do that. Now, you with that said, you need to keep it as a corporation. I have Entrepreneurial Success LLC, and every month I have to tell the state it is incorporated in the state of Virginia, and I have to tell the state of Virginia what I've sold. I have to pay any sales tax that is due. If no sales tax is due, I have to tell them there is no sales tax due and why there is no sales tax due. It could be there were no sales. It could be that all the sales were wholesale sales and meant to somebody who collects a sales tax, that not being me. And then in that case, you have to give who it was sold to, and you have to give their tax number, so the state can go after them for the sales tax. You have to file yearly reports. There's just a whole raft of things you have to do. And if you do not do them, well, then it's called piercing the corporation. An individual who wants to go after the corporation can pierce the corporate veil and go after me personally, if I don't do those things. So it is, forming a corporation is not a one-time deal. It's an ongoing deal, whether you do any business or not. So if I have Entrepreneurial Success LLC and I do not sell a book, there are no sales to it, I still have things to do.
Interesting. So you still have to file that report, and if you do not fill the requirements, then the LLC status will not protect you in the event that the state comes after you for that for piercing the veil.
Well, the state can come after you, or let's say you sold me a car, and I didn't pay you. So you would have to go after the corporation. But if your attorney found out, and he would find out, that I did not do the things that I need to do to keep the corporation legal and alive, then you can say, well, the corporation may not have any money, but Joe Geiger has money. So we'll go after him personally. And if I did not do that stuff, you have a perfect right to do that, and you will probably succeed. I will lose. However, if I did do that, all that stuff, well, then you did. And it's not that it's terribly difficult. It just, every darn month, it comes up. Now, the sales tax thing is a monthly thing. There's some other papers you have to file yearly. They're not a big deal, but they have to be done. And if you don't do them, you have to pay the corporate tax, and it's not very big, but, you know, let's say it's $10 a year. It could be 10, it could be 100, it could be, you know, 1,000 if you're a pretty good size. But if you don't do that, whammo, your corporation dies, and it dies from neglect, as it were, and that means that the person actually running it is personally liable.
This is very interesting and important information, because I'm sure a lot of people probably didn't know that, you know. A lot of people probably didn't know that. And so this would be across the board, right? I mean, regardless of any business that you have where you're actually selling a service, where you, whether you're selling a product or a service,
correct,
this applies to any and all businesses under that type of where you're selling and receiving monies for your product or service?
Yeah, and even if you're not receiving money, if you're
selling it,
or if you're not selling. You know, you're not selling, so you say, well, heck, I didn't sell in my case any books, so the heck with it. I'm not gonna take the time to file all this stuff. Well, you really ought to, because back when you were selling books or you were doing things, you bought a computer, and I bought a computer, let's say, and I bought it under the LLC, but I didn't pay for it. I only paid for half of it. I didn't pay for it. And so the reason I didn't pay for it is I didn't sell any books. And so they come after the corporation. They find out the corporation has no money. And they say, well, how about, is the corporation in good standing? Those are the words that they use for the state. They find out the corporation is not in good standing. We'll go after Joe Geiger. And they will succeed.
That alone is worth the cost.
Yep, and it's not just for the corporation. Let's say I filed the corporation in Virginia, but I sold a whole bunch of books to some group in North Carolina. Well, I have to have, because I was selling in North Carolina, I have to set up a foreign corporation, that meaning the paperwork was not originally in North Carolina, it was originally in Virginia, but I'm now selling books in both Virginia and North Carolina, and so if I didn't set up a foreign corporation, then I'm not in compliance with North Carolina's laws, and they can come after me. And because I didn't do that, they can come after me personally. So you have to set up a foreign corporation, which is very easy to do. I mean, this is simple stuff, but it is intricate, and it needs to be done.
That tip alone is worth the cost of the book, Professor. Matter of fact, when we get into each principles, I mean, most of them are worth the cost of the book, but that one is probably one that a lot of people miss because they just aren't aware. And, you know, so that was that was a doozy there. I hope everybody was paying close attention to that. So,
by the way, just because you're not aware, that is absolutely no excuse. Because you own a business, you are an expert in businesses. Whether that's true or not, that's the way the law sees it, and they see it that you are an expert, and you should know. And if you say, well, I didn't know, they say, too bad, pal, you should have. And so,
if you don't know.
Yep, that's correct.
Well, Professor, if we could back up just a bit, because you touched on general partnerships, and would there be any, because we know the downside now, I mean, you know, of course, if you're not an LLC and you open and operate a business, if somebody, they can come after you personally, what
Correct.
Would be the upside? Is there any upside to a general partnership?
I don't know there is one. I don't think there is. There are lots and lots of downsides, and they go from bad to worse to god-awful. But as near as I know, there are no upsides. Now, some textbooks say, well, it's easier to do. That's not true, because if you start a partnership with you and I form a partnership, we have to designate all kinds of stuff. we got to designate what you do and what I do and all kinds of stuff. When we start a corporation, an LLC or an Inc., incorporated, we don't have to do any of that. All we have to do, because the corporation is a person in the view, in the eyes of the law. So all we have to do is form a proper corporation. It could be an LLC, it could be an Inc. There's a number of different ones. Some are fairly obscure, but those are the two biggies. And there's another one that is a corporation, but it's for very small corporations. However, that's pretty well disappeared. And virtually everybody now is using LLC or a C-Corp, which is an INC, Inc., Incorporated. And in those two cases, well, you know, you're a corporation. And once you form those, if you want to join me, or maybe you wanted to join me from the very beginning, or I wanted to join you once the corporation is formed, well, then inside the corporation, we can say, well, you own half and I own half. And you're going to be the salesperson, and I'm going to be the office clerk, or whatever. But we don't need to tell the world that. We just need to tell the corporation that. But if you're a partnership, you need to tell the world that. So that needs to be in your original documents. And if I decide I want to leave and go to California or Colorado, I'm perfectly okay to do that. But if we're a corporation, inside the corporation, I no longer own anything. I sold my stocks for $1 and other valuable considerations, or for something to you, or primarily to somebody else, and away I go. However, if we're a partnership, well, the partnership just died because I left the partnership. And so we had told the whole world that there were two of us, but now there's not two of us. There's only one. And you get somebody else to take my place. Well, that's fine, but you essentially have to tell the world that. You have to change all your documents.
What happens when you take companies or corporations or LLCs that merge? I remember once, just to take the companies, for example, Sirius XM Radio. They used to be separate companies. I remember Sirius and XM were actually competitors at one time, and ultimately they formed Sirius XM. So what happens in the event that you have a merger? What does that do? It's a rhetorical question. I assume you got to just file new paperwork, but just so we don't assume anything, what happens when you have a merger?
No, you don't have to do anything, because what usually happens in that is that Sirius bought the stock, or not the stock, the assets of XM, and now they're operating the assets. They may have a name change, but that can be totally internal. They have a meeting, and they just decide they have a new name. So that's that's no big deal. There's three things that can happen. Corporation one can buy the assets of Corporation two. You notice I say assets, not the stock. Mm-hmm. You buy the stock, just goes away. You file some papers and you say that Corporation 1 no longer exists. The assets have been sold to Corporation 2, or vice versa. Corporation 2 buys Corporation 1. Or the third alternative is the two of them form a new corporation, and the new corporation buys the assets, the old corporation, not the stock. If you buy the stock, you buy all known and unknown liabilities and assets. You buy everything, known and unknown.
Mm.
All the liabilities. Mm. So I don't want to do that. I'm Corporation 1. I'm buying Corporation 2. I don't want to have anything to do with the the liabilities of Corporation 2. So I buy the stock.
You mean, so you buy the assets?
I mean, I buy the assets. Pardon me. I buy the assets, not the stock. Do not buy the stock.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three things that can happen. One can buy two, two can buy one, or they form a new one. In all cases,
mm-hmm.
they're dealing with the assets, not the stock. And people get in big, big trouble. There's some famous cases where big corporations who should have known better. Sometimes the corporations are on the stock exchange and they want to buy the stock. To me, that is very, very dangerous. I mean, there are some who have bought the stock and found out that liabilities can go into the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm.
And because they bought the stock, they bought the known and unknown assets and liabilities. And saying, well, I didn't know that. And Corporation 2 didn't know that there were liabilities out there. The courts say, too bad, so sad, you're still liable for them. And
so you would put that
some,
on the attorneys? Would that be just an attorney, a bad lawyer, or just somebody?
Well, the attorneys say, oh, well, too bad, pal. You paid me. I washed your hands. You paid me for my services. I didn't say I was going to take on any of the liabilities here. So, no. No. You are it. You were tagged. And there's some, like I say, some very famous ones. There's one, something canal, Love Canal, which I think was in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, someplace up in there. And a big New York Stock Exchange corporation bought another corporation that had been dumping toxic waste in Love Canal. And all of the people who lived close to that within a couple of blocks started getting sick. And they ended up losing hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm.
And nobody knew about it beforehand. I mean, maybe Corporation 2 that was bought out knew about it, but they didn't realize what a disaster it was. And because there was, they tried to put it back on the owners, but they were not successful. And the new corporation was on the hook for the whole darn thing. And that's pretty common.
Well, if we could talk for a moment before we move into the next principle, since we're on this topic about due diligence. I mean, because when you're talking about what could possibly happen, it's very important for people to research the company if you're thinking about buying another company, just doing due diligence. Period, regardless of if you're thinking about buying a company, if you're thinking about starting any business in any industry. Could you talk about the importance of doing the research and getting the information so that there aren't too many surprises? Again, you mentioned, like, you know, this is life, things are going to come up, but you want to be prepared as best you can. Can you talk about due diligence?
Well, due diligence just says it's a business term, a legal term that says that you researched it. But do not make the mistake that your due diligence or the attorney's due diligence or anybody else's darn old due diligence is going to you'll come up with all the possible problems because they may be unknown. Remember, you buy the known and the unknown assets and liabilities. Come down real hard on the unknown part. So you could do all the due diligence you want. But maybe nobody knew. I mean, there was a time when raw sewage was dumped in the closest stream or river or pond. And we now think, oh, my God, how could anybody be so horrible to do something like that? Well, the city of Chicago was that horrible. They turned the Chicago River into an open sewer. It got so bad because everything was being dumped in it. One summer, it caught on fire. And there was a blaze going on because there was a whole bunch of oil sitting on top of the Chicago River. Hudson River, same thing. I mean, it was so toxic that nothing could live in the Hudson River. and the cities up and down it were dumping whatever in it. Well, people just didn't realize. The same thing was true of London, the Thames River. All through Europe, all the big rivers that went by cities, most of them turned so toxic that nothing could live in the river. And then they found out about it, and Connecticut River, and I was in the East when the Connecticut River was being cleaned up, and I went fishing there one time, and I caught a trout, and I was told it was one of the first trout caught in there in like 40 years because it had been so toxic that nothing could live in the river. So just because nobody knew it, they did know it, but they didn't realize what a problem it was. And just because you know it and you don't realize, that's why it is known and unknown. So do not buy the stock. And you do your due diligence. You publish it that Company A is buying Company B. If Company B owes you some money, you need to come forward. And you publish it in three public places, is what the law says, or at least it used to. It probably may say something different now, but essentially you have to publish it. However, if it's, let's say you bought a company here in Richmond, you would not necessarily publish it in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and you wouldn't necessarily put it on the local radio or television station. You would publish it in three very obscure but nevertheless public places. And there are some public newspapers, essentially, that all they have is they publish just notices, legal notices. And, you know, we're a Greater Richmond is 1 million people. There may be a couple hundred who read that thing, and there may not be that many. But nevertheless, you published it in the three places. And so you publish it so everybody is on constructive notice. Those are the legal terms. And you put everyone on constructive notice. So if the Company B owes people, they better come forward. You should then go through all of the accounts that Company B has and notify them that Company A is buying. So come forward or forever hold your peace. And if they don't, well, they don't. And if they come forward the day after it closed and you have bought the assets, not stock, and they say, well, you owe me $10,000. Hey, pal, too bad, so sad. You should have told us before. We would have seen to it that you were paid. But you didn't tell us before, so you're not going to get any money, and they will, in all likelihood, lose.
Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the awesome book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. Can you imagine how much information is in this book? We've just talked about one principle today, okay? And look at all of the information that you've gotten so far, okay? We're going to get into the next principle. This book is full. This book has got 105 of them, okay? So you want to definitely get this. Professor, let's talk about principle number 52. Do the right thing. In business, you know, it's assumed that people go into business with good intentions. It's assumed that people are honest and that they will do the right thing. But it's a principle in your book for a reason. Could you talk about do the right thing and how important that is?
Yeah, and it's what is the right thing? And what is the right thing for you as a business owner and for your customers? And the right thing is to pay your bills and to give to have employment for people, to pay your people, and to be courteous to your customers. And a lot of people who have not been in business will say, well, they're at odds, and seemingly they are. So how can you maximize your profit and be really concerned with your people and your customers? So customer number one comes into your business and wants to buy a drill. So you go right quick like and sell him the most expensive drill you have, because let's say that customer is a lady or a guy who has never used a drill in their life, and somebody sent them over to get a drill so that if they wanted to punch a hole in the wall, they can do that. And so you can sell them a drill motor, hand drill, for $25. You can sell them one for $125. You can sell them one for $225. Which do you do? And the maximize the profits say sell them one for $225. But if you're going to do the right thing, you say, well, customer, how do you want to use this? Well, what's its purpose? Is this a present to somebody who is a construction worker and is going to use this drill every day, many times a day, is going to drop it off scaffolding 30 feet up and expect it to bounce off the ground and survive? Or is this something to keep around the house, and whenever you want to hang pictures, you'll be able to drill a hole once every 3 months? And so then, now that you know that it's actually to have at the house, you still can sell them to maximize profits for $225. Or you can say, well, look, this is a perfectly good drill. If you're going to keep it around the house, it will last you for years and years and years. And it's $25. It's made by Skill. They're the largest manufacturer in the world. They also own DeWalt, and the $225 drill is made by DeWalt, which is actually owned by Skill, and the $25 drill, which you can buy at Sears, is made by Skill. So same company, but if you drop the Skill drill off of a 20-foot high scaffolding, the chances of surviving are poor. If you drop the DeWalt off the scaffolding, be careful of what it hits, because it isn't going to hurt the drill, but it might hurt the ground when it hits the ground, because it's tough as nails. It's heavier, and it will last forever. I mean, unless you dunk it in salt water, it's going to be there, and it's going to keep working. But it's also going to cost $225. So what does all this mean? How can you boil this down into something that's understandable? Well, you take the long drill view, and Home Depot does that. They tell all their people, when somebody comes in, when particularly somebody you think probably doesn't really know what they're buying comes in, you make sure you ask them what they're going to use it for. And if it's for something around the house, don't sell them an industrial product. Sell them a product that will do the work and will keep doing the work for quite a while and will keep their costs down. So you take the long view. And if you do that to your people, 10 years from now, you'll have a dedicated customer. But if you sell them that $225 drill, and let's say it's a lady and she gets home and her husband, who does understand the equipment, says, what did you buy that thing for? I mean, I told you to go get a drill, not something that we're going to use 40 times a day every day. And she said, well, this is what they told me to get. What are you going to do? Neither of them are ever going to go back to your establishment, ever, because you got them. You set them up. Mm-hmm. And granted, you made a big profit once. if you sold them the thing that does the product, does the job, and you kept the cost down, they'll probably keep coming back. And 10 years from now, instead of buying one drill, they would have bought $10,000 worth of stuff from you. And each time you made a little profit, but you didn't try to skin them. So that's do the right thing. What's good for people? And there's, again, some very famous examples of that. There was a guy in Idaho, who had a plastic packaging company, and he made like crates for eggs, you know, the little cartons for eggs, and he sold the company, and during the sales process they'd agreed on all the terms and everything, and it took about a couple of weeks, but during that couple of weeks they found out that one of the chemicals they were using was a carcinogenic, and they couldn't use it anymore. And so what the owner did of the company that was being sold, he went to him and said, we need to cancel this until I can figure out how to make these things with replace this chemical that is a carcinogenic, because eventually the government's going to stop you from building this, making these egg cartons for a dozen eggs, and you will have bought this from me, and then you won't be able to do it. And they eventually figured out how to do it. He then was the only one who had making egg cartons, the foam cartons, that did not have the carcinogenic in it. It doubled the sales. And he stuck with the original price when they redid it. Now, that's doing the right thing.
That is
big
definitely
time.
Doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That is definitely doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he could have sold it to him and stuck him with it. He could have, when he canceled the sale and they figured out how, and the company is now worth twice, he could have said, well, that old price that was before, now we're dealing with now, and be perfectly in his rights. But he didn't do that.
Wow. And that's what seems, I hear a lot of people today talking about businesses when it comes to even just down to even customer service. I was actually reading something recently where somebody was complaining about a store. They were giving the reviews of this particular store online, and, you know, everybody seemed to be, you know, excited about this store, except for this one review that the person didn't like the customer service. The person was, you know, thinking that it appeared as though that, I guess, she was bothering the salesperson. That was the vibe she got, because I guess she must have asked the person a question or something, and the vibe she got in return, she felt, at least she wrote in her review, that she felt like she was being that the person acted as though she was bothering them. The shelves weren't stocked properly. I mean, the store was kind of, dingy or whatever. That was her review of it. And, you know, you have people that a large customer base, and they just assume, well, I'm going to get the business anyway. And it's actually a niche store. It's one of the only there are a few type of stores like this, but, you know, it's kind of rare in the D.C. area. And so I guess they just assume, well, I got the business, so I don't have to do the right thing. You know, I've got the customers coming in. I don't have to do the right thing. And, I mean, that the right thing could be on many, many different levels. But in this particular example, you know, it was just, you know, plain old customer service. You know, keeping the store clean.
Yep, that happens, and eventually it'll probably get them, because what'll happen is somebody else will say, well, this store down here, they're the only ones that handle red widgets, and they don't treat people very well, so, hey, maybe I ought to start selling red widgets, and I will treat people very well. And it comes to get you. I've had people, when I was selling airplanes, come to me after we have delivered an airplane. Think of one specific thing. I delivered an airplane, and I made a mathematical error in addition. And this guy came back and said, hey, you made a mathematical error in addition. And as it turns out, it's in my favor. So I owe you some money. I just about fainted. But he insisted on it. And he was a great customer. You talk about somebody that when anything went wrong or he wanted anything, boy, you talk about hopping too. We did, because there was a guy who should be rewarded for. Normally, they'll come to you if you make a mathematical error in your favor, but not in theirs. And I've done that. And gave him money back.
And you know, that was right.
The airplane business, and my three stores were the first, second, and third largest in the country. The three of them represented 30% of the companies, of the manufacturers' total production, and they had 50 or so dealerships, and we represented a third. And people said to me all the time, how is it that you can sell these airplanes at full list and I have to discount by almost all my profits? And I said, well, it's because I treat people right. And that's our price.
Well, there goes out the window the old saying that good guys finish last.
Yeah. I found that very, very occasionally. The vast majority of people, business people I've dealt with, are unscrupulously honest. Now, there are exceptions, but the vast majority are really great folks.
And just because the vast majority are great folks, everybody, doesn't that mean that you don't dot your I's and cross your T's and, you know, follow the principles in the book? I mean, you know, because, you know, there are people out there that, in spite of the majority of people being good, you know, there may be people out there, and you'll be just your luck that you run into, you know, somebody that's unscrupulous and is not ethical and does not mind at all taking your money and ripping you off and sleeping good at night. So definitely we want to tell you how you can get this book. We just finished up Do the Right Thing. And next time, Professor comes on every 2 weeks, normally on Tuesday. So make sure that you mark your calendars. Professor will be back on Tuesday after next from 7 to 8 p.m. If you were fortunate enough to catch the show today, you caught it at 10 a.m., but normally Professor comes on from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be starting a brand new chapter when Professor comes back. We'll be starting a business. That's chapter 7, starting a business. Now, so that you can be up to speed when we come back, you can get the book. And that way you can read all the way up through chapter 7, if not further. And then when Professor comes back on, you'll be caught up and you'll know where we are, and you'll have the benefit of actually having the book in front of you and in your possession. Professor, it's a great interview, awesome book. How can the listeners get this book? And Professor is also the author of another book called Finding a Career for Life. Professor, how can people get your books?
They can go to Amazon, and in the case of Entrepreneurial Success, they need to go to the book portion and put in Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles. You need to put in the last part because there are several Entrepreneurial Success books. That's their name. With Finding a Career for Life, you just have to type in Finding a Career for Life. If you go to my website, which is theroadtothetop.llc, or .com. If you go to theroadtothetop.com, you will find it there, and you can go on the website and order them. The cost is the same. The ones that I sell come from me. I sign. Otherwise, they're exactly the same. And the Entrepreneurial Success is $17.95, a little less than $18. And Finding a Career for Life is a little less than $10. So there you go.
Well, Professor, before we go, can you tell the people about the book, Finding a Career for Life? It's a great book, not expensive at all, but can save, oh my God, talk about a deal. What a deal. You can actually save yourself thousands of dollars, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars by getting this book. Can you tell the people about Finding a Career for Life?
Yeah, basically it was written because I had so many people who got degrees, and then they came in and took one of my classes, and we got to talking, and they said, well, I have a degree in psychology, and I spent my money. I spent 4 years. I finally got the degree, and then when I got out, much to my surprise, I found out that there were no jobs for that degree. And I said, well, that's sad, because I could have told you that before you ever started. There are no jobs. If you have a bachelor's or a master's in psychology, there are no jobs, period, amen. That's the end of that story. If you have a PhD, you can teach, and there's some big corporations that have psychologists on their payroll. But it's a very, very thin job source. So this is a research project. One of the downsides for me is I got to rewrite it every year because the data changes, and I'm doing that right now, as a matter of fact, for the 2019 edition. I'm about three-quarters away finished of that, and it will be out. But 18, there's just some changes, but I want the data to be as accurate as I can. There's no agenda in it. I don't care whether you want to go to college or you don't. But what it does say, if you don't want to go to college, if you're satisfied with your high school diploma, it gives you a list of what jobs are available, how much they pay, what the future is for them, are the people who are doing them satisfied with them or not. It tells you what cities to go to. It gives you a list of 120 jobs based on how satisfied the people who have them are with their job. What is the most satisfying job, which actually, as it turns out, it's being a clergy person, a religious clergyman. And although the most secure job, which right now is being a dentist, although I think that's changed slightly. It's dentistry has been number one for years and years. I think it's number three now. So on and on. It breaks it down by the cities, by all kinds of ways, so that you can, before you spend all kinds of money and time to get a degree, you have an idea of what you're getting. It costs you the same amount to get a four-year degree in psychology as it does to get a four-year degree in petroleum engineering. The difference is a psychology degree will get you a job, maybe, that pays $25,000 or $35,000, and the petroleum engineer $183,000. So it costs the same to do it, but one gets you about seven times more money. And the personal satisfaction is higher. So there you go. And there's hundreds and hundreds of career opportunities that are out there, and it gives you some real hard guidance on where to go.
You know, everybody, this has been an awesome, awesome interview. Professor, I don't know how you're good on time. Somebody has a question. Do you have time to take one call before you go?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to call the last four digits of your number, 7704. 7704,
hey.
You're on the air with Professor.
Hello.
Hey. My question is, when you're talking about the LLC and doing the monthly, your monthly arrangements that you have to do to stay in business.
Uh-huh.
Do you do that on your own, or do you automate
yep.
that through a process?
Nope.
Or
it's all done online. I'm in Virginia, mm-hmm. so if I sell out of Virginia, it's virtually always wholesale. And I so what I have to do is I go online, I pull up my a form to fill out. It maybe takes 4 or 5 minutes, and you fill it out, hit go, and boom, done. If you have to send in money, you send in money. You tell them you can do it on a credit card, you can do it with a check. But it's very easy to do. It's all automated in that, but you have to do it each time. But it's like I say, it takes 4 or 5 minutes. It's an easy deal. Just do it.
Right.
You have another
okay.
question?
Well, I'll save it for our next session.
Oh, go ahead.
Time. But oh no, I was just.
Oh, he said he's good on the time.
Okay. Well. In my experience is both my wife and I both have businesses and they're different. I have an electrical company. She has a body care company. But the point is time. It's like we have intentions to do the bookkeeping, but we never do it. And I don't know if I'm the only one like that. It's just
nope.
It's yeah. So that,
well, all I gotta tell you is that you're walking down a road full of minefields, and so mm-hmm. as long as you don't step on a mine, it isn't going to blow your foot off. But if in your construction business, if somebody wants to sue you because you have
mm-hmm.
money and they want to get a share of it, you will personally be liable.
Right. Yeah, correct. I know.
Well, do
I
something about
you.
It.
That's
okay.
an LLC. Are you
yeah,
an LLC? What type of?
Here's what it go to an LLC. If you type in start a business or incorporate a business, 39, put in 39. There's a company called Quick Business, Quick Corp. It costs $39 to do it. And in addition to that, you have to pay whatever state fee there is. And then that's all it costs. Now, if you want them to do the documentation for you, there's another small cost. So here in Virginia, although I've done 10 businesses when I incorporated this one, I didn't want to go through all the problems, and it cost me $200. It cost $40 for the paperwork, the basic paperwork to get it started. It costs $100 for the state. Doesn't make any difference how you do it. You're going to have to pay the $100 to the state. That's a one-time fee. And it costs $60 to do all the other paperwork. And they send you the papers in loose papers. I punched three holes in it and bought a three-ring notebook, and which cost me $6. I got a really nice one. And there you are. And now
mm-hmm.
it's all done. So I would
okay.
strongly recommend that you do that, my friend, particularly in the construction business.
I don't recall the caller. Did you say that you're an LLC or we're not LLC?
It's an LLC.
You're an LLC?
It is, okay.
Yeah, both businesses are LLC. Yeah.
Okay, well,
and they're fairly new.
Well, do the weekly, the monthly stuff, and the yearly stuff. The tax returns, if your state is like Virginia, it's simple. It's absolutely, you won't spend 5 minutes on doing it. So it's easy to do, and it doesn't make any difference whether you wanted to do it at 2 a.m. or 2 p.m. It's all online. It's simple. Do it.
And to the caller, I know that you know that. And to the caller, I just want to say this. I know that you know that, you know, this is life and that in life we're going to have our challenges, right? We're going to have our challenges. And we just want to make sure that we cover everything that we can cover so that the challenges that we end up ultimately having aren't or isn't something that we could have avoided and that we look back and say, you know, I sure wish I'd have taken the time to do those books, man. I sure wish that I had just taken some time, set aside, made some time to sit down, you know, and get that straight, you know, because of course there are going to be challenges, but you, when looking back, You don't want to look back and say, wow, it was something. You would prefer to look back and say, that happened and it was out of my control, as opposed to, I could have controlled that, but for whatever reason, you know, I didn't control it. So, you know, just, you know, thank you for tuning in. And you're going to be tuning in next Tuesday, not this Tuesday coming up, but the following Tuesday?
Oh, I will. And thank you both. You know, we have three boys under 10 years old, and it's just, days just seem like they just go by and by and by. But I will start making time and, you know, changing my thinking about it.
It sounds like you probably aren't keeping your books very well. Get QuickBooks or one of those, and once you learn how to use it, it's simple. It's absolutely simple. And you just have to do it every time. That's all. But you can't just write a check or hand out a credit card, and you got to document it. But it's simple to do, and all of the mathematics is done for you. You just enter the data, enter it the way they say, and poof, it's done for you. It used to be that you couldn't do that, but now you can, and you can go get a QuickBooks or one of the others that is designed specifically for your company, your type of business, and it makes it just easy, easy, easy.
Professor, can you mention to him about the cash flow forecast before you go? Because that's important for people that are in business. A lot of times people aren't familiar with it, but it's a very, very important part of record keeping. The cash flow forecast?
Well, a cash flow forecast is, I have one on my website, costs $15, and it's designed for a very complex business, but if you have a simple business, you just don't do a whole lot of things. But it's designed that if you have a car agency that is embedded in it, it's about five separate businesses, it'll do that. And if you're an electrical contractor, it'll do that. And it's simple. Mm-hmm. But what it does, it allows you to forecast what's going to happen in the next year. And it just asks lots and lots of questions. And once you get it done, it'll print out for you what it looks like you're happening. And when I first started using that, after I'd had about four or five businesses, I didn't realize how easy this business thing was to make a profit. But it really, really helped. And it took all the bad surprises. They all went away because you dealt with those before they happened. And and it's a simple thing to do. It takes a little time to go through it, but it's a one-time deal. You do it once a year, and it tells you essentially what your cash flow should be for the next year, month by month.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and we both only been in legal business for 3 months, so I'm just staying ahead of it, and
yep.
That's why I said on the next session with starting the business, I really need two in for that.
Okay. Well, buy my little book, and I think you'll find it will help you a lot.
I guarantee
right.
you, man.
Well,
I've read this book like four times at least, you know, because it's not just for business. I mean, it's the principles are for business and for life. I mean, there have been times when I've actually had a situation come up, and I actually thought about, and it had nothing to do with business, and I thought about one of the principles, and it actually helped me to get through that situation, just thinking about one of the principles in the book. So I think it would be a worthwhile investment for. And if you know of other entrepreneurs, it's a great gift for anybody who's in business, because there's a lot that we don't know. You know, we need somebody to take our hand and, you know, help us to navigate the waters of business. And some principles are just principles that can apply to, regardless of what business that you're in, you know, it can apply simply because it's a principle, you know. So I'm glad you called in, and I'm glad you tuned in, and hopefully you'll get the book, and by the time Professor comes back on, maybe you'll have the book, and even if not, we can go through, we're still going through the book principle by principle, and the book has other examples. I mean, we're just talking about when Professor comes on. I mean, there may be somebody that says, well, hey, I'll just listen to the show and won't get the book. But the book has other examples that we might not talk about during the course of the show. might be several examples that we don't talk about per principle, you know. So, again, it's I've read the book four times, and I don't recommend books unless I've actually, you know, am in favor and think the book is a worthy, you know, book to share with our listeners. But, again, thank you so much for tuning in, and hopefully you'll be with us next time. Again, next show is Tuesday after next, and it's going to be at 7 p.m. Do you follow the show? Because you'll be notified. If so, you'll be notified every time there's a show. You'll be notified of the guest, the time, the topic as well.
All right. Well, many blessings to both of you guys. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, Professor, thank you so much. You've given us some extended time. I really appreciate your time today, the extended time. Great interview, and looking forward to the next one again.
Okay.
A lot of great information in the book, and I'm thankful that other people are calling in and getting this information, because when you're doing, you know, something as big as starting your own business, a lot into it. You're putting a lot of your own energy, your time, your energy, your love into it, your money, you know, so we want to make sure that you're successful in that. Professor, thank you so much for your time. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Okay, take care. Everybody, that is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. He's, again, author of another book called Finding a Career for Life that you can actually get, well, the same way you get entrepreneurial success. Just go to theroadtothetop.com. Okay, my name is Juwanza. Again, everybody, I just want to thank you so much for your time. We have an awesome archives, by the way, for all of you entrepreneurs out there. Professor Geiger is a regular on the show. He comes on once every 2 weeks, normally on Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So for all of you entrepreneurs, you want to just scroll down and you'll see all of the shows with Professor Geiger. If you're into spirituality, we've got shows that will help you to grow spiritually. Okay, we've got shows with priests and priestesses of the Osiriset Society, which Shechem and Shechem, Dr. Raoul Nefer Amen, Dr. Orwa Hehimeduran Kamed, I mean, priestesses, what's the name? Can't think of the priestess's name off the top of my head. It's going to come to me before I hang up this phone now. Shechem Amhet Emma'at did an awesome interview on meditation, more than just breathing and relaxation, as well as the power of Sekert. You want to scroll down and see those interviews and listen to them. Shechem Hepchem Suheru, Shechem Me'ab Neter. We've done countless shows with him on the winter. I'm sorry, on the equinoxes and the solstices, as well as, again, other priests and priestesses with the Osiriset Society, Shechem Tebrahim Sa'ah, and others. So definitely. Oh, now, I was going to tell you, I got a surprise coming up. I got a surprise coming up for all of you spiritual people, but I'm not going to share it here. I'm going to let it be a surprise, okay? We've got shows on holistic health, okay? I mean, we've got shows with Dr. Ruby Lathan. She cured herself of thyroid cancer after the doctors had given her a bad report and told her they wanted to remove her thyroid. She changed her diet to a livid, rid of a lot of the stress and other things in her life that were causing that, and cured the cancer. Brother Coy Dunstan, who's a regular on the show, cured his mother of cancer in both breasts, the liver, and the colon after the doctors had given her just 6 weeks to live. Okay, he changed her diet for living, took her off meat, dairy, sugar, and all that, started fasting, doing enemas and everything else that he knew how. And lo and behold, within a year, the cancer in both breasts was gone. The cancer in the liver was gone. The cancer in the colon was gone. And so we promote a vegan lifestyle here on Health, Wealth, and Divine. And I know it's a process, but if you really want to do it. So I want to thank you so much again for your time. I definitely don't take you for granted. You could be doing anything. So I just want to say, Duane and Ted, for taking time to tune into the show today. My name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? It's a poo.